Morning, everyone, and welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists, Zooming and in person from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Before we get started, just a few announcements, and then we'll send it over to the chairperson for today's meeting. If you are coming in to Theosophy Hall, we just ask that you come in fragrance-free because there are some of us who have sensitivities to colognes, scented soaps, perfume, that sort of thing. And just some Zoom etiquette. We've been very grateful over the course of the last 2.5 years that we have been able to continue spread broadcasting these ideas of the philosophy of theosophy through Zoom. We have made many new friends from all over the world and are very, very grateful for that. It gives an added perspective to the philosophy. So it has been very, as we said, a very joyful experience to that. And in order to keep Zoom being agreeable to everyone, we just ask that if you aren't speaking, if you could please keep your microphone on mute. And if you do have to get up and walk around or adjust your video, to please put it on stop or hold, as a lot of the movement can be disruptive. And we ask that participants speak directly to the chairperson when called upon, and please do not use any of the initials when referencing another person's comment or question. These traditions are designed to welcome all to the study of philosophy, to the philosophy of theosophy, without distractions. Let us all work to maintain these declared traditions. And we will turn the meeting over now to the chairperson for today's meeting. Thank you.
We'll begin our meeting with a reading of the declaration and a presentation of the announcements.
A reading of the Declaration of the United Lodge of Theosophists. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy, without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy and the exemplification in practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers. No bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by studying otherwise, be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. Announcements on Sunday, October 9th, 2022, at the Philadelphia Lodge, located at 1917 Walnut Street. The Philadelphia Lodge holds meetings on Sunday mornings, Wednesday evenings, and Friday evenings for the purpose of disseminating the philosophy of theosophy. All meetings are accessible through Zoom, and all are free and open to the public. The Sunday morning meeting is both Zoom and on-site accessible. Theosophy Hall opens at 10:30. The meeting begins at 11 and ends at 12 noon. Month, an umbrella theme is selected for study. The theme for this month is Universal Theosophy. Each Sunday, an aspect of that theme will be presented as a forum, a lecture talk, or panel discussion. Last Sunday marked the beginning of our Sunday winter schedule, and the first lecture was Theosophy and the Theosophical Movement. Today's lecture will be The Great Founders of the Theosophical Movement. And next Sunday, October the 16th, the topic is Historical Evidence of the Theosophical Movement. The Wednesday evening study class meets from 7:30 to 8:45. Last week marked the beginning of our yearly study in The Ocean of Theosophy, a book by William Q. Judge. The topic of study was entitled, Masters, Perfected Human Beings. Do they help mankind? This Wednesday, the topic is Masters, Perfected Human Beings, Historical Traces. The Friday evening discussion group meets from 6:30 to 7:30. This is an informal roundtable type of meeting. We are continuing to study articles in The Heart Doctrine, a book by Mr. Judge. Last Friday, we discussed the article on reincarnation of animals. This Friday, October 14th, the topic will be Cities Under Cities. Please note, everyone is welcome to participate at lodge meetings. Those wishing to participate are asked to address their comments to the person chairing the meeting. This process helps maintain the desired atmosphere of anonymity and impersonality. All lodges are independent, regardless of where they might be located in the world. Each sets its own schedule of activities. But the unifying force between all of the lodges is the Declaration. All lodge work is sustained by voluntary contributions of time, money, and work. If interested, please contact the Philadelphia Lodge or one of the other lodges listed at the Phoenix website. Straight line theosophical materials mentioned may be purchased from Theosophy Company in Los Angeles, California, or purchased directly from individual lodges, or purchased on Sunday mornings on site at the Philadelphia Lodge. Also, these same materials may be downloaded for free from the Phoenix, Arizona Lodge website. That concludes the general announcement. Next, we will do a reading from The Voice of the Silence, translation and annotation by H.P. Blavatsky. Fragment 3, The Seven Portals, can be found on pages 70 through 73. No, conqueror of sins, once that a Sewanee have crossed the seventh path, all nature thrills with joyous awe and feels subdued. The civil star now twinkles out the news to the night blossoms. The streamlet to the pebbles ripples out the tale. Dark ocean waves will roar it to the rocks, surf-bound. Scent-laden breezes sing it to the vales, and stately pines mysteriously whisper, a master has arisen, a master of the day. He standeth now like a white pillar to the west, upon whose face the rising sun of thought eternal poured forth its first most glorious waves. His mind, like a becalmed and boundless ocean, spreadeth out in shoreless space. He holdeth life and death in his strong hand. Yea, he is mighty. The living power made free in him, that power which is himself, and raised the tabernacle of illusion high above the gods, above great Brahm and Indra. Now he shall surely reach his great reward. Shall he not use the gifts which it confers for his own rest and bliss? His well-earned weal and glory, he, the subduer of the great delusion? Nay, O thy candidate, for nature's hidden lore, if one would follow in the steps of holy Tathagata, those gifts and powers are not for self. Wouldst thou thus dam the waters born on Sumeru? Shalt thou divert the stream for thine own sake, or send it back to its prime source along the crests of cycles? If thou wouldst have that stream of hard-earned knowledge, of wisdom heaven-born, remain sweet running waters. Thou shouldst not leave it to become a stagnant pond. No, if of Amitabha, a boundless age, thou wouldst become co-worker, then must thou shed the light acquired, like to the Bodhisattva's twain, on the span of all three worlds. No, that the stream of superhuman knowledge and the diva wisdom thou hast won must from thyself, the channel of Alaya, be poured forth into another bed. No, O Narja, thou of the secret path, pure fresh waters must be used to sweeter make the ocean's bitter waves, that mighty sea of sorrow formed of the tears of men. Today's lecture, Great Founders of the Theosophical Movement.
Theosophy. The word itself is powerful. It represents a powerful idea and fact that there is spiritual wisdom, knowledge of the nature and origin of the soul, its faculties and powers, its responsibilities and purposes, its great evolutionary journey. According to the laws of nature and the law of its own being. All is soul in evolution. The entire universe, with all the worlds, solar systems, stars, planets that we can see, and even those we cannot see, has come forth because and for the evolution of soul. Soul, in its most universal, all-embracing concept, is living spiritual intelligence that guides and impels the forms of matter. Every atom, molecule, cell, being, from the most minute to the grandest we can imagine, is alive and intelligent in its own degree. Soul, its mission is to gain individual self-conscious existence and then to raise that conscious awareness and unite itself with the one universal, omnipresent source of all, which sustains and permeates and unites all things in one great whole. The human being does not have a soul. The human being is a soul, an individual living, intelligent being, which is self-energizing, self-choosing, self-determining, and is working through a body, brain, and that bundle of qualities we call our personality in any one life. The great mission and responsibility of the human soul is to liberate itself from the limitations imposed by the body, the brain, the personality, and to raise its individual consciousness to universal self-consciousness, and at the same time, raise the soul, the living, intelligent consciousness, working through all the kingdoms of nature. For nature cannot accomplish this task on its own. The spiritual intelligence, the living spiritual intelligence working through any form or degree of nature is appropriate to that nature and only can raise it to the limits allowed by that form. But that intelligence involving there can be aided, can be impressed, can be moved forward by the fire of the light of the human soul. So nature, without the influence, the effort of the human soul, cannot succeed in its ultimate purpose. The Theosophical movement is the manifestation in the world of the elevation of the heart and the mind of the human race to awareness of its sole purpose and responsibility and service, and its place in the evolution of all beings. There have always been human beings, individuals, and groups in ancient times, in modern times, in all places, who have individually and collectively been inspired to engage in this true service of humanity, to free the heart and mind from that which would restrain it, and to elevate the awareness of all human beings as much as possible to their ultimate and higher call to service. Regardless of the race, the creed, the sex, condition, or organization, they are regarded as theosophists because they individually and collectively intuitively feel and are inwardly inspired to the degree of their own perception and understanding of the great truths regarding the soul. And in this effort, in this movement, humanity has never been without a friend. It has been watched over, guided, instructed, and in some instances, even protected from itself by great souls, individuals who have reached that highest state of universal self-awareness and consciousness of the unity of all life, and have developed their instruments, their faculties on the physical, the mental, the psychic, the moral planes of their being to the highest possible degree in this period of evolution. And yet they remain with humanity, always watchful and looking for opportunities to find those companions in the great cause of theosophy, which is the cause of humanity. And regardless of the race, creed, sex, condition of an individual, they are united invisibly by their similarity of aim, purpose, and inspiration. They are co-workers, co-supporters, co-founders of the theosophical movement. So if we consider the meaning of theosophy, we've considered the meaning of the theosophical movement. And now we have to turn our attention to understanding the meaning and nature of the great founders of the theosophical movement, those great souls, those elder brothers of humanity. Theosophy is the accumulated wisdom gathered, checked, tested, preserved, and periodically given out by these great souls. The theosophical movement is at times generally and specifically aided by the efforts of these great souls, these founders of the theosophical movement. So it is these three ideas, theosophy, theosophical movement, and the great founders of the theosophical movement, the Mahatmas, the great souls, which are like three sides of a triangle. They are a unity, and yet each of the sides exists inseparable and interdependent with the other. The Theosophical movement, the Theosophy, the great founders of the Theosophical movement do not exist or cannot exist by themselves. If one finds evidence for one, one has evidence of the others too. And so together they form an invulnerable triad, three aspects of the one same idea and ideal. And for us, it is important to grasp this, because the more we understand of Theosophy, the more we understand the nature of the Mahatmas. The more we understand the nature of the Mahatma, the more we understand Theosophy, and the more we understand and want to become inspired, a co-worker in the aims and purposes of the Theosophical movement. So all three are necessary for us to study. So the great founders of the Theosophical movement, the Mahatmas, have been called the ideal and fact of human perfectibility, human soul's highest point of perfectibility in this period of evolution. Because perfectibility is ultimately relative to the conditions the soul works through. In some new period of evolution, where greater opportunities and possibilities lie, there is greater opportunity for expansion and development of soul. So while perfection is a potential aspect of soul and spirit in its journey, perfectibility is relative. Perfectibility, or we might even interchange the terms, we may say perfection. The status of our perfectibility is relative in any point. But that ongoing process of perfection, that ongoing process of perfectibility is without beginning and without end. So the great founders of the Theosophical movement are masters first of compassion. They are masters of wisdom, and they are masters of the creative forces of nature that work through them. So this is also a threefold idea that needs to be grasped to understand what it means to be a perfected human being. So as masters of compassion, as said, they have traveled that path of liberation of the mind from the limitations of the senses, the body, the personality, the illusions and delusions that are constantly bombarding the mind. And it raised it to a level of perception of what is truly real and enduring. And that which is true and enduring within themselves is true and enduring in nature. They perceive the unity of one life and the unity of all manifested life, and feel themselves to be identical not only with all human souls, but all souls in all the different kingdoms in the great evolutionary journey. And they are masters of compassion, because as indicated in our reading from the Voice of the Silence today, they have deliberately chosen throughout all this long effort to acquire whatever they can of wisdom, of power, of perfectibility of their own nature, not for their own benefit, not for their own individual salvation, not for their own experience of bliss and rest. In fact, they renounce that. They renounce their self-interest and rather devote themselves wholeheartedly, completely, and absolutely to the salvation of all beings and all human beings. So they have renounced, in a sense, the path of liberation and have taken up unswervingly the path of renunciation. And finally, in that aspect of compassion, compassion expresses itself through the virtues, those moral forces in our nature. And they have perfected and strengthened those moral forces we call the virtues to their highest possible degree, which has made them capable of being beneficent co-workers with nature, has made them the keys to unlock those gates, those mysteries within nature. The second idea, besides being masters of compassion, is understanding that they are masters of wisdom. What we have already heard is that all human beings are one in their spiritual essence with the one source of life, and all human beings are one in their spiritual essence with the Mahatmas. The great creative forces of nature come forth from that one source. And as they are present in the Mahatma, the great soul, they are present potentially within every human being. And yet, to take that potential creative force in the essence of every human being and make it an active, beneficent force requires knowledge, not just virtue and compassion, but knowledge. And this knowledge has been achieved by them through the perfection of all the physical senses and faculties, the psychic higher and lower faculties, the spiritual senses and faculties, so they can look into the very heart of nature, the hidden psychic, mental, spiritual forces and laws operating in all the great departments in nature, and understand them firsthand and how to use them. But more than that, it's not just an understanding, they have to assimilate it. They have to become the embodiment of that knowledge, that wisdom. In that sense, theosophy is something that we learn as we go about applying it and assimilating it into our nature. So they have gained all that knowledge through a long period of discipline, checking, testing, and verifying their experiences with those of others, and have recorded that and preserve them down through the ages. The third aspect of there being the ideal and fact of human perfectibility, besides them being masters of compassion and masters of wisdom, is they are masters of the creative forces in nature. It is taught that man, the human being in general, is the microcosm of the macrocosm, is one with nature, mirrors in his nature, and has represented in his nature all the creative forces of nature. They're there potentially, but they have to be awakened, as we said. And it is done so over the long, long period of evolution on this world. It is said by the end of the great period of evolution on this planet we call our globe, our world, the human race will be a race of adepts, perfected human beings to the highest possible degree on this planet. And yet there are those who, by their own individual effort, have reached that degree of power earlier in fewer lives through continuous effort and devotion. Now, as said, they don't acquire this compassion, this wisdom and knowledge for themselves. It is a path of compassion, of renunciation, of service to their fellow human beings who they regard as their brothers and sisters. And they regard the intelligence in all the kingdoms as a brother and a sister. And so they periodically give out a portion of their accumulated wisdom. And this knowledge, this moral impulse, this demonstrated power and its influence in the world is what we recognize as the periodic manifestation and activity of the theosophical movement. So there is a lodge of adepts of varying degrees who periodically send out a representative, an agent, or perhaps more than one agent, to a particular nation and race, according to whose perceptive faculties is given as much as can be given out. And we can trace that historically. And through our study of the literature and texts, the symbols and myths of all ancient civilizations, Eastern and Western. Next week, next Sunday, in fact, we will look more closely at the historical traces of the theosophical movement. And for us, their most recent agents, the most complete expression of their wisdom, their accumulated wisdom, but not all of it, of course, the most that could be given out in our contemporary period, our modern period of where we find ourselves in evolution, our agents being HPB and William Q. Judge. And we found expressed in their writings, their teachings, which we call theosophy. So theosophists around the world are bound not only by their similarity of aim and purpose, but the teachings. And they are loyal to the extent they can be in understanding, expressing, and promulgating those ideas as they have received them to others, so that each and all can be their own authority in these matters, can test, check, and verify these ideas, and in their own capacity, become a companion a co-founder, if you will, a co-worker, a co-supporter, more completely, better able to help and teach others and serve the Theosophical movement. So these are some ideas we have presented to us in the philosophy. And at this time, we welcome any questions or comments you may have on this grand, inspiring subject of the great founders of the Theosophical movement. ULT.
Good question.
ULT.
Yes, we have a question in Theosophy Hall.
The speaker says, mentioned, or declared, whatever, that we do not have a soul, but in fact, we are a soul. We were wondering if we could also say that we are soul, because in the fundamentals, it talks about the universal oversoul, and of the human race all being sparks or rays of that one universal oversoul. So can we say both? Can we say that we have a soul, an individual soul, but also that we're part of the universal oversoul? We would like a little clarification on that. Mm-hmm.
So the question is, can we say that we are not only, as human beings, individual souls, but are we also in our higher universal nature, soul, in its universal sense? And the question is based on an understanding of the third fundamental proposition, which we will be going more into specifically in a few weeks and, of course, throughout the year. That idea that the first universal manifestation of that which is eternally unknown, absolute, everywhere present, is the universal oversoul, what has been called the logos by the Greeks. But it is the universal expression of the hidden thought and potency of that whichever is and cannot be described. So it is the universal living intelligence, spiritual, that is not only a unity, but as evolution proceeds, just as the sunlight, which is a unity passing through the prism of a material nature, differentiates into seven rays, each with their multitudinous degrees of color variation. So too, this universal soul, this oversoul, working through substance in the course of evolution, differentiates into individual monads or souls in evolution through the various kingdoms. But that full individual capacity of mind to direct that universal intelligence, that universal force through self-conscious awareness, isn't reached till that monadic expression, that ray of the universal oversoul, begins to work through the human kingdom. And so we can say in our higher spiritual nature, yes, we are a universal soul. But as individuals, we are souls working through a body. In fact, we are the immortal pilgrim soul working through a long period of evolution and a long succession of personalities, bodies, and different races and nations under the influence of those laws of cycles and reincarnation and karma. MDW.
In your presentation, you use the term the one life. What exactly are you referring to?
The question refers to the one life. We usually approach life from the perception of how it appears, the effects we observe in nature, in the animal kingdom, in the human kingdom, and in the plant kingdom. And we tend to define life by certain biological processes of assimilation, of reproduction, of respiration, of circulation. And so where we see these effects, these functions operating, we say there is life. So we tend to deny life to the mineral kingdom. And when we say that those functions have ceased to exist or ceased to be active or observed to be active on the physical plane, then we say that entity is dead or there is no life. Theosophy teaches that there is no form of being in any of the kingdoms of nature that is not alive or conscious in some degree, that is not sensitive, is not responsive, is not impelling, is not a force in some degree. And that potential and potency of life does not end with the death of the body. And we observe this in nature because even with the death of the body, we see its constituent parts continuing to live and make up the lower kingdoms of nature. There is no beginning or ending to life and its manifestations, only in the forms in which we can perceive it. So that leads us to an appreciation of this theosophical idea that life ultimately is the vivifying force of spirit in manifestation through any degree of substance. It is an energy, it is a power, it is a potency. Yes, of course, we see it on the physical plane as the breath and the circulation and the respiration, but it also exists in the life of our desires, in the life of our thoughts, in the life of our moral force, in the life of our spiritual nature, because all are one and the same from that same primordial, eternal, universal principle. And as that principle comes forth or manifests periodically, that breath of life expands and expresses itself throughout all of nature. So life is not the effect, but rather it is the cause of all the beings, of all existence, of the forms that we observe. JCS.
So it would seem that this concept of abstract universal life, unknowable by our finite minds. This is the binding concept in the brotherhood of all of the world's great religions, isn't it? If we look into scriptures everywhere, we find this sacred teaching of the unknowable source to which, in a certain way, we submit.
As pointed out by the contribution, this understanding of life as the manifestation of that one ever unknowable source is the all-embracing binding force that unites all into one whole, that makes all interdependent. It is, in fact, the spiritual basis of this idea of universal brotherhood. Because we are all, in our spiritual essence, one and identical with that one life. And part of the theosophical movement, part of the purposes of the theosophical movement, is to realize that religion, or religions, rather, are but a lens by which individuals can see those universal truths. And the more we understand of different religions and the common underlying ideas of all religions, the greater our lens, the clearer our lens to perceive that one underlying truth of the one life. And we have it expressed in the various religions. ULT?
So we know that if we take back all the major religions with all their trappings and dogma, we take it back to the essence of them, we have what would be the theosophical movement. So what was the purpose then, as time went on, that all these different ways, methods of worship, of dogma, what was the purpose of all of these arrangements then, rather than just understanding the wisdom and passing the wisdom on as is without the trappings and the dogma?
Just as we say that there is that one life that sustains and supports all beings, there is one truth, one reality, one wisdom, which is an ocean from which all the enduring values, ideas of the various religions of the world have come forth. And indeed, as we look and study more of the historical traces of the theosophical movement, we see that the teachings of what we have, mostly oral, but sometimes recorded and to some degree, of the individual so-called founders of these different religions, we see that in many of their expressions and ultimate meanings, they are saying the same thing. They are expressions of that effort of that lodge of adepts of wise beings to bring to a particular people in their own imagery, in their own symbolism, in their own ideas, these universal truths. But what happens in time, because as mind beings, we are immersed in the world of physical nature and our bodies and brain and all the ideas that come to us through the senses and misconceptions, that these ideas become muddied, become colored with our own misconceptions, and sometimes through the influence of others who would take that knowledge and rather than use it for the benefit of others, would misuse it for their own purposes, for their own self-aggrandizement and control over others. So the initial purpose, we might say, was to bring forth that wisdom in the best way possible to a particular people. And in the process of evolution, that purified stream blends with the prevailing ideas and becomes distorted. So the purpose then of the continuing effort of the theosophical movement is to turn people's attention back to those fundamental universal spiritual truths which underlie all the religions, which are the essence of that boundless accumulated wisdom of the ages we call theosophy. And ultimately, we see that that wisdom is based on laws, enduring laws of nature, expressed to us in the form of symbols and myths and stories and legends. But if we had the keys, if we were had access to the keys, we would have a better understanding of those laws of our inner nature that have been preserved and manifested through those great founders of the Theosophical movement. MDW.
What relevance does it have that there are these perfected beings in the world? What relevance does it have to each of us? Is it simply an idea? Or what is it saying to us?
The relevance is, of course, that it's not only an ideal, but it's a fact. It represents what one human being accomplishes, any human being can accomplish. And as we had said before, the relevance is that if we can substantiate or prove to ourselves or understand the existence of the Mahatmas, great souls, we understand better what the Theosophical movement is, because they are the great impulse behind the Theosophical movement as it is expressed on this plane. But also we understand better what Theosophy is, that it comes to us, it's an accumulated wisdom, or it is knowledge. It's not a belief, it's not a theory, it's not a speculation, it's not a divine revelation, but it is all that can be known of the inner and outer forces working through all of our nature and all of great nature. Now, we do have a hand raised up. MUE, you have a question or comment? Mohammed, you have your hand up.
Are you able to hear me?
We are.
Yes. I hope everyone is well. Thank you so much for giving me a chance to speak and ask a question. With respect to the, I believe there is an effort to move away from using the term ascended master and to use the term adept or ascended being. Is this correct?
In reference to Jesus, are you speaking?
I'm referring to the Mahatmas that you alluded
to. As ascended beings.
Yes.
Yes. Go ahead.
Yes. I want to ask if anyone is willing and able to provide an account reflecting this. Has anyone been psychically and or spiritually in touch with such entities who are currently incarnated into this plane? And if so, please provide your description and or experience.
Well, very good question, very important question. And ultimately, would require individual effort and proof, because these are matters of psychic and spiritual perception and realization and facts. And how can you communicate that to one who has not already developed those faculties in order to perceive them to the same degree? So we can only answer that briefly in very general ways that would apply to all of us. And that is that to understand that humanity has never been without a friend. The Mahatmas have worked in the past, they are working in the present, and they are working in the future. And they feel themselves to be identical with us, and they are continuously working, looking for companions who are in accord, in union with their great aims and purposes. And they have said, if we take one step towards them, they take two steps towards us. So is it possible? Have there been? Based on those ideas, probably. But ultimately, it comes to each and one of us to reach that plane, to answer that question convincingly for ourselves. So at this point, we'd like to thank you and remind you that next week we will continue our exploration of universal theosophy by looking at the subject of historical traces of the theosophical movement.
Thank you.